Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning. Filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out, you can find me at CDunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. NBA Cup action last night. Had some good basketball games, but I have one overarching thought after watching the NBA Cup. We'll get into that here shortly. An overreaction, not an overreaction. Drew Hill has a great piece about Brandon Clark and him trusting not only his Achilles, but his entire lower body. Again, so we'll talk to Drew Hill about that at about 4:30. Drew is waiting for the Grizzlies' open practice to be over, so we might have to slide Drew Hill to later in the show, but we will have Drew Hill on at some point today talking about the Memphis Grizzlies. We will have David Cobb at 5 o'clock, and there's really only one thing I want to talk to Cobb about. Bill Belichick, UNC, seems like it's going to happen. A blue blood of college basketball, rehauling their entire athletic department to bring in a 6-time Super Bowl champion, and arguably the greatest coach we have ever seen in the NFL, Bill Belichick. But my question to David Cobb is going to be, is it a good idea for either side? Is it a good fit for either side? We'll get into that at 5 o'clock. And then we will get into the blitz and small talk to wrap up the show. But as always, I am joined by the Honorable King George, George Ruggiero. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, did you see Goga last night?
We've been talking about Goga off air and
on air.
On air a little bit. I texted you about that first. That dude's a menace.
He's a menace.
Absolute menace.
He's a menace. And you texted me before he absolutely obliterated
Giannis.
Giannis Antetokounmpo in the post with a dunk. Goga is coming for all of us, and I just hope that he is going to be a kind ruler because we are about to go into the Goga era of the NBA. Everybody get ready for it. He was fantastic in their loss last night. I enjoy watching him play basketball so much. He's just the biggest human being I've ever seen.
And the crazy thing is like, obviously we try and look at statistics and his actual measurables. He's not that big.
But he's big.
But he's huge. And, you know, to quote the late, great Bill Walton, truly, he threw it down.
Absolutely threw it down. The NBA Cup was really fun last night. I've been enjoying the NBA Cup. I think it has been an overall success. They've somehow gotten players to buy in. I do think that it is important that they have a lot of, you know, brands still left in the NBA Cup. I do think that that crowd in Vegas could get interesting if all of a sudden you have, like, the Hawks and the Rockets in your championship game. But right now, when you still have the Knicks on the board, the Bucks are still on the board, Thunder on the board, and you potentially have the Warriors there, it's looking pretty good for the NBA and the NBA Cup. But with that, let's go ahead and jump into overreaction, not an overreaction. All right, George, my first overreaction, not an overreaction today is the Oklahoma City Thunder should be the runaway favorites in the Western Conference. And to that, I say overreaction, but a small overreaction. But it is an overreaction. The Oklahoma City Thunder, the runaway favorites in the Western Conference. Runaway? I don't know about that. Favorites? Sure, I'll take favorites. Oklahoma City is 3-11, or I'm sorry, 11-3 since Chet got injured. 11-3 since Chet Holmgren went down with his broken hip. And it still seems like he's got a lot of time. There's been video of him walking around on it on crutches. Whew, looks rough. But they have been able to stay afloat, and if anything, they have increased their lead in the Western Conference without Chet Holmgren. Now, getting a guy like Hartenstein back during that stretch was a big deal for them. It gives them a different style of basketball, but they are 11-3 since Chet got injured. They have a top-5 offense and a top-5 defense in the NBA. They are now the only team with that. The Grizzlies have dropped down to about 6 or 7 on defense, so they are no longer in the top five of both categories like they were there for a little bit.
And that's not even their fault, really. They haven't played that many games in a while.
I know. It's been brutal. So, I've been trying to find things to do with my time. I don't know what to do. I need Memphis Grizzlies basketball back. I'm very appreciative of the break that they are going to get. I understand they have played a lot of games already this season. But for the love of everything, give me back Memphis Grizzlies basketball. I don't know what to do at night anymore.
I was going to say, you guys don't see Connor like I do almost every day, or actually at this point every day. You know, he's fiending for it. He's over there sitting in the dark, shaking a little bit. Like, he just needs
watching
Grizzlies.
Watching old highlights?
Yeah. From, like, last week.
You just found me in the corner watching the Boston Celtics game this morning when you walked into the office for the first time. It's like, but where's Connor? It's like, I think he's in his office in the dark watching the Celtics
game. All the lights are out, and, you know, there's, like, the, you know, light glow of his cell phone in front of him or his laptop.
Yeah, that is absolutely what I'm doing at this point. But they do have, but the Oklahoma City Thunder, top five offense, top five defense in the NBA. They are the number one defense in the NBA. And last night when you were watching that game, the defense is what jumped off the page, is what jumped off the screen to you. They have so many guys who can lock down people on the perimeter. Carson Wallace was fantastic on Luka at the end of that game when he had that block. I don't even know the last time I saw Luka get a step back three blocked. I didn't know that was necessarily possible. Well, guess what? They figured it out. You've got Jalen Williams running around. SGA is legitimately one of the best two-way stars in the NBA. He is a superstar. Whether you like his game or not, I understand why most people may not like his game. He is a bit of a foul merchant. He gets to that line a whole bunch. But
he didn't last night.
But he can fill up that stat sheet whenever he wants to. He is a bona fide superstar in this NBA. He is an MVP candidate. If the Oklahoma City Thunder run away with the one seed in the West, which they may do, it might be difficult to not give it to him, even if Jokic puts up a Wilt Chamberlain type of season, which he is right now. I don't know if you know this. When you look at PER, which some people don't know, you know, some people don't love PER, but overall I think it's okay at identifying players and habits. He has currently the best PER season we've ever seen, beating Wilt Chamberlain's unreal year where he averaged 50 points a game. That is what Nikola Jokic is doing this year. But if they are in that play-in, can you give the MVP? Can you give him the MVP, even though his team's still in the play-in? I would argue yes, but I feel like NBA voters may not.
That's always the big thing with MVP awards for not just the NBA, but every major league. It feels like it kind of just ends up going to the best player on the best team, which doesn't always make the most sense. Like, if you look at Oklahoma City and you look at this roster, and, you know, just to stick on topic here, they're also one of the deepest teams. I mean, they rolled out eight players, nine players with over double-digit minutes.
Well, and every single guy that they roll out can give you something offensively, and they can lock a guy down defensively. And that is why this offseason, them being able to get Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey and a bag of chips should have been vetoed by the NBA, a la Chris Paul to the Lakers. Because what are we doing? We're allowing the Oklahoma City Thunder to add another demon like Alex Caruso on that team. And I understand Alex Caruso's had a rough offensive season. I get it. But he's there to play defense. And you know what the Oklahoma City Thunder don't need? Offense. They got plenty of it. I mean, their starting five right now is Jalen Williams, Isaiah Hartenstein, SGA, Lou Dort, one of the best defenders in the NBA, even if you consider him dirty, which he probably is.
Sure.
But one of the best defenders in the NBA. Cason Wallace has been phenomenal for them this season.
What's the similarity from last night with all those players?
Wing stoppers?
Well, that, and they were all in double-digit points.
They were all in double-digit points. Yes. Isaiah Joe coming off the bench. Alex Caruso coming off the bench. Aaron Wiggins is an interesting player when he gets a run. Kenrick Williams is somebody that I've been a fan of for a few seasons now. They've just got a lot of dudes. And that is why I do think that they will probably win the Western Conference. But runaway favorites? No. No. And for one reason and one reason only, in my opinion. It's the Memphis Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies, I think, are the only team in the Western Conference right now that can match their pace. They can match their defensive intensity. They can match their small ball lineups, their big lineups. We've already seen it. You've got a guy like Zach Edey at 7'4". He can go in there when you need to go big. Jaren Jackson Jr. is one of the best bigs in the NBA this year, playing at an all-NBA level. You've got Brandon Clark when you need him. You've got Jay Huff. one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA off the bench. You got Santi Aldama, also one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA off the bench. They're actually 2-3 off the bench in the league.
Just
a percentage around the rim. Oh, you'll love to see it. Brandon Clark has really come into form the last few weeks. That's what we're going to talk to Drew Hill about here in just a little bit. Is it a bit of a homer take? Sure. I've been watching the Grizzlies. I've watched every Grizzlies game this year. This is a different type of basketball team. They are different than Grizzlies teams of the past. The offense looks a lot smoother. The defensive intensity is there. Ja Morant is a bona fide superstar player, same as OKC has with SGA. The biggest difference between Ja and SGA is that SGA can lock down on defense. That being said, Ja's giving the best effort we've ever seen from him on the defensive end, and he has certainly made a leap there. So I think that they match up pretty well. And it does feel like we may be headed toward this brawl between the Thunder and the Grizzlies at one point. The Thunder, a lot of people claim, stole the Grizzlies' swag. They're a little bit more corny with it. I'll give you that. They're a little bit more corny with it. They did kind of steal some of the post-game blueprint from the Grizzlies. Does that really matter, though? No. Does it make a fun conversation for a rivalry? Yes. These are two of the most talented young teams in the NBA. They are going to have to fight each other for years to come, hopefully. Can the Memphis Grizzlies beat them? Maybe.
We'll find out.
Maybe.
This month, we'll find out.
We'll find out this month. But the biggest thing that the Grizzlies have to work on, and the number one reason I'm a little bit nervous about this matchup, is the Grizzlies' three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. I think the Grizzlies have been very good this season, but they've been right in the middle, three-point shooting, in the NBA. They are 17th in the NBA with three-point shooting, but there is some context that we need to add to that 17 ranking. Desmond Bane is shooting 32% from three this season. That is not a normal Desmond Bane shooting season. We expect him to go back to where he's supposed to be, around 41% over his career. If he can get back to that, you'll see that number go up.
I'm hoping this break that we're having, because we mentioned it yesterday and I think in the last week or two about Desmond Bane just personally, I do think his health is kind of pushing that to where it's lower than not just the expectation, because we also know, you know, from being around it, his hard work, his work ethic, and, you know, we obviously know he's working on it, but I do think his health is hampering him. And I think breaks like this in the schedule, where this was an unexpected break. I mean, this Brooklyn game showing up is solely because of the NBA Cup.
Right.
So getting an extra, how many days in a row now is
four.
This?
They'll get four days off.
I would expect him to be doing just some light practice, hopefully getting his body healthy and right for these upcoming games, because after this break, it is back to the tough sledding. A lot of games and not a lot of days.
A lot of games. A lot of games and not a lot of days. But you heard Santi Aldama talk to Rob Fisher about it after that Wizards game. He was like, listen, I'm glad that we were able to focus up on this game. We didn't have to put forth too much effort against the Washington Wizards. George, if I'm being quite honest, I think that they may have been able to win that basketball game with the two of us out there. I still have no idea how the Denver Nuggets lost to that team with Jokic dropping a 56-point triple-double. I don't understand it. If I were a Nuggets fan right now, I would be slamming the panic button.
Have to.
You're telling me that Jokic put up one of the best stat lines we've ever seen and you lost to the Wizards, who couldn't make a shot? Haven't been able to make a shot all season? They have a fun little core group of players, but they're still terrible. They have no business beating a team like the Denver Nuggets. Panic time.
I figured it out. How, as a team,
did they just bomb threes? It had to be.
No, it's not even. I mean, they kind of did. They were 39% from three, but how do you allow Jordan Poole, of all players, to put up a 39 spot?
Oh, yikes. Yikes. That's almost even worse. Oh, my God. Spotting 39 to Jordan Poole? Yikes.
Valanciunas had another 20-burger, which, I mean, that's not unheard of. That's pretty normal, I'd say, for him. He's still a very good center.
Gonna
offensively.
Get traded. Terrible defensively.
Offensively.
He's terrible defensively. That's going to hit a team like a bus soon. Lakers, you're going to trade for Jonas to help with your defense? Good luck. Good luck. Yeah.
Have fun only getting rebounds.
Go look
really
at the pick-and-roll defense. Please. Please. Go look at that. That's
actually,
why the Grizzlies don't have him anymore.
Don't tell him that, because I mean, it'd be great to have them pick him up.
It'd be great. If the Lakers drop out of the playoff race, that'd be great. It helps out the Grizzlies.
Also, Justin Champagne, he also put up 23 in that game.
But to bring it back to the Grizzlies, they are 17th right now in the NBA in their three-point shooting. Desmond Bane is having a career low at 32%. I also think some adjustments the team could make. Jake and Luke have to shoot more, especially Luke Kennard. I appreciate the playmaking that Luke has shown this season. He has been a successful player for the Grizzlies this season. His net rating is pretty good when he's out there on the court. He's played better defense than expected. Yeah, all that great and good. Luke, you're here to shoot the basketball. If you feel leather, it needs to be heading toward the rim, period. It's been fun watching you pass the basketball this year, but the team's mostly healthy. They've got the ball handlers. They got the point guards. You're good for now. Shoot the damn ball. If you feel leather, shoot the ball and shoot at a high volume. You're not shooting at a high volume. You're passing up a lot of shots to try to get a better shot, which I appreciate and I understand, but you're Luke freaking Kennard.
Three.
Shoot the basketball.
Words. Catch and shoot.
Catch and shoot, Luke. Catch and shoot.
It's a simple formula.
If you feel leather, shoot the ball. Jake LaRavia, same thing. You're passing up on a lot of open shots. And I understand against bad basketball teams, getting a better shot, probably the best play to do. But when you're going up against teams like Dallas, or you're going up against teams like the Thunder, teams like the Rockets, some of the best in the Western Conference, some of the best in the NBA, you've got to take that shot. And that is why in the Celtics game, I really appreciated he was taking those shots. He was taking those threes, hit a big one, hit a huge three in the Celtics game. You got to take those shots.
In a way, for a guy like LaRavia, I'm willing to give him a little bit more of a pass because of two main things for him that he does really well. For one, his wing defense has been phenomenal this season.
One of the best in the NBA.
And his off-ball movement, if you watch them in the half court when LaRavia is out there, he never stops moving. He's always making these dangerous moves towards the rim when he doesn't have the ball. And that's part of what makes him so effective on the offensive end, just as much as his shooting. So,
and I'm only asking for like one more shot per game from three from both of them. Jake LaRavia has taken 2.2 per game right now, and he's hitting 39% of them. That's a great percentage, but shoot more. You've shown the ability that you can knock him down. Shoot him more. I believe in you, Jake LaRavia. I believe in you. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. Jake LaRavia, I need you to shoot the basketball more. You've shown your playmaking ability. You've absolutely shown what you can do on the defensive end. Shoot the ball more. Luke Kennard, shooting 3.7 per game right now at a 40% clip. Shoot more. Shoot five a game, Luke. Five a game. Now, some of that has to do with minutes. I get it. But when he's in the game, if you catch the ball around the three, shoot it. Stop pump faking. I've never seen Luke Kennard pump fake more than this season. And I understand the Grizzlies have been wanting to get into the paint. They're doing that at a high rate. But they've got to be able to balance this offense out a little bit more. A little bit more. Because it's not just about the volume of three-point shots. It's about knocking them down. You need your best shooter shooting those threes. And over the last few games, who has been taking those threes? Marcus Smart. And is Marcus Smart your best three-point shooter? No. Do I believe in Marcus Smart as a player? Yes. Do I want him taking seven threes a game? Absolutely not. Especially not in transition.
The transition threes are a different issue. How many three-point attempts is he
averaging? He's taking five a game.
That's still too many.
He's taking 5.1 a game. Here are the three-point shot leaders for the Grizzlies this season.
Yeah.
Desmond Bane's taking 5.6 per game. That's
expected.
Great.
That's, yeah.
He's only shooting 32%. That's going to, you know, water's going to find its level.
Exactly.
I'm not worried about him. He's going to be fine. Jaren Jackson Jr. taking 5.2 a game. Great. Shooting 35%. Not bad. We've also seen, though, over the last few games, Jaren is beginning to get that three-point shot back. Pete has talked about it on the broadcast a few times. He went through a bit of a mini slump. He was so dominant in the paint, and the Grizzlies were on such a run, you didn't necessarily notice it. It wasn't a huge issue. But I think one of the really important things of that Boston Celtics game was Jaren Jackson Jr. showed up from the three-point line. When he's a three-point threat out there, it really opens up the paint for a guy like John Morant to get in there and do some damage. What I also love about Jaren on the perimeter, you throw the ball out to him, he's somehow become one of the best ISO dribblers and scorers in the NBA, if not the best one in a lot of circumstances when you look at the stats. A guy steps out on him, a big man, Jaren's going to get around him and get to their hoop.
Oh, yeah. His actual dribble moves and the way he's able to get to the rack from the three-point line, for someone his size, is one of the most impressive things in the NBA.
His left hand.
His
left hand's one of the best in the league. That little
crazy
left-hand baby hook that he does,
mm-hmm.
Automatic. Automatic. It's like that Brandon Hook floater.
That little floater from
automatic.
Right outside the rim, yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, Brandon Clark around the rim, shooting 83%. 83%.
It doesn't shock me. I mean, that's another one.
Efficiency.
Efficient, and you can see it. Like, you can see it in real time as you're watching the games.
Marcus Smart, though, 5.1 threes a game, 32%. It's not terrible.
No.
It's certainly not what you want, though.
Well, like you said, the biggest thing with him that we have a problem with are these transition threes that end up being a detriment to the flow of the offense, which for a guard like him who we expect to be stout defensively and then facilitate, these transition threes are kind of what kills his ability to facilitate.
So, three-point shooting, that is a area in which the Grizzlies can improve. I think they will improve. Like I said, I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. getting back to normal will certainly help that percentage. I think that Jake and Luke taking more threes would certainly help that. The biggest factor is, though, Desmond Bane shooting 32% right now.
Yeah.
If he starts shooting just as we know he can, they're going to be fine. But ultimately, all of these reasons, the way they can match up, they can go big, they can go small, their defensive versatility, their bona fide superstar in Ja Morant, who can get you a bucket whenever you want to. Jaren Jackson Jr. is getting pretty close to that. You can match up with the Thunder in a lot of very good ways. Bench depth, Grizzlies certainly have it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of why it's interesting. Because when you're looking at these rosters and you're thinking about the potential matchup with the Oklahoma City Thunder, do you need to make a move? Do you need a lockdown 3-and-D guy? Because in the last few days, a few names have popped up that are really interesting for the Memphis Grizzlies. One of which, Cam Johnson. We discussed him yesterday. I think that Jeff Calkins had a great point when I talked to him about it. You're going to have to give up a pretty penny for a guy like Cam Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Smart, LaRavia, a first is one that I've seen floated out there a lot by Grizzlies fans. Sure. If that's it, hey, I'm all for it. Is that all? Is that going to be the price for Cam Johnson? Probably not. They're going to want a little bit more. We're dealing with the Brooklyn Nets here.
Yeah.
Think about all the moves they have made in the past. Mikal Bridges, they said no to four first for him. Five.
They got five.
Am I giving up five first for Cam Johnson? No way in hell.
Yeah.
Am I giving up three for Cam Johnson? Maybe.
I was going to say, that's a little
maybe
different. Three.
Maybe.
Keep talking. The other maybe big one.
Also said that they want expiring contracts back.
Okay.
And guess what the Memphis Grizzlies have? Expiring contracts. Jake LaRavia is expiring. Luke Kennard is expiring. Marcus Smart, that's close enough. But you'd have to use Marcus for money anyway.
Yeah, that would make the numbers work. And a team like Brooklyn, the way that they're trying to build that team right now or rebuild that team, which it feels like they're perpetually rebuilding.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart brings a good veteran kind of presence to a young group.
Yeah. Now, Herb Jones popped up today.
That is the one I was going
to
bring up.
Grizzlies are plus 400 to get him right now.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the odds, he is someone that I did not expect to be in the market. I did not think that the Pelicans were going to look at the season and say, what we need to do is trade one of our best players. It is surprising to me. They also haven't been able to get off of Brandon Ingram, and he's not out indefinitely. So they might be looking at the season and saying, we got to get something from it, and Herb Jones might be the best way you do it. If Herb Jones is available, you could probably get him at a smaller price than Cam Johnson.
He's less high profile.
But we kind of got, do we have Herb Jones at home? Is Vince Williams Jr. close enough to Herb Jones? Now, I will say, Herb plays.
Yeah.
I love Vince. Love Vince. I'm getting a little bit worried about the injuries. Little bit.
Yeah. With the timing of the injuries for Vince as well. And I will say as well with Herb Jones, he's been in the league a little bit longer. I think his offensive game is maybe a little bit more developed as well, where he can kind of add.
It's more consistent.
Absolutely. And his defense is certainly nothing to, snub your nose at. Herb Jones is a great defender.
He's a tremendous defender. Some people would say he's the best perimeter defender in the NBA. Now, I think that on some nights you could also argue that Vince Williams Jr. isn't far away from him. But it's going to be an interesting conversation to have. He's 26 years old. He shoots 38% from three over his last 10. He's only shooting 29% from three during the regular season, but he's also only played 7 games. So it's interesting. It's interesting. Keep an eye on it. I would say right now, stay patient. Mm-hmm. I still think that Cam Johnson's the one that makes the most sense. With Herb Jones, I still think that we might have Herb Jones at home and Vince Williams Jr. You got to see what he can give you. And I still think it matters that you have a guy like G.G. Jackson coming back. G.G. averaged 20 points a game last year as a starter. 20. One of the youngest players in the NBA. If you want Cam Johnson, you might have to give up G.G. Are you going to do that? I don't know.
That's
a tough question.
That's a very different question than giving up expiring contracts in a guy like LaRavia and Smart and, draft capital.
I think what it's going to come down to is the Memphis Grizzlies are going to have to look at their roster at the deadline and say, can this team beat the Oklahoma City Thunder? It's going to come down to that because the Mavericks, I think we saw that you match up well against them. They're gettable. They're really heliocentric. And you saw that last night. Luka plays at his own pace, and he's one of the best in the NBA at doing it. Jokic is probably the only guy ahead of him at playing at his own pace. That being said, last night it was a bit of a detriment to the Mavs. They needed to speed it up a little bit. You could tell it was holding them back a little bit. So the Mavericks, you know, they certainly are a good matchup. They have a chance to make it to the Western Conference Finals, no problem about it. Yeah, absolutely. Rockets? I think the Rockets are the Thunder from last year or 2 years ago. I think they're the Grizzlies from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Really good team. Might catch somebody in the playoffs.
Could certainly catch someone in the playoffs.
Maybe. I think they're not ready yet. So that leaves, really, in the Western Conference, in my opinion, that leaves the Grizzlies as the Western Conference's best hope against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Are the Thunder the favorites in the West? Absolutely. Would I be shocked if we see Celtics Thunder in the NBA Finals? Nope. I do think, though, the Grizzlies have a puncher's chance to beat them, but you're going to have to figure out your three-point shooting, because even though it's not bad right now, it's 17th, it's not bad at all. It's got to be better to beat a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder. Your depth is there. Your defensive versatility is there. Your superstars are there, plural, Jaren Jackson Jr. You've got a chance, but watching the Thunder last night without Chet handle the Mavericks in the way that they did, handle Luka in the way that they did, raise the eyebrows a little bit. You said, uh-oh, have I just not been taking this team as seriously as they need to be because I think they're corny? I got to do a lot of introspection there.
Those commercials with SGA.
They are rough. Those commercials are rough. But this Thunder team, it is something to be dealt with, and they are something to be reckoned with in the Western Conference. But I have the belief that the Memphis Grizzlies also may need to be reckoned with down the road. Now, next up, we're going to have Drew Hill continue the Memphis Grizzlies discussion. We're going to focus on Brandon Clark, though, and his recent play and him trusting his lower body again. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm now joined by the Memphis Grizzlies reporter for the Daily Memphi, and you can find him on Twitter at @DrewHill_DM. Drew, how's it going, my friend?
What's up? You guys caught me at the perfect time. Grizzlies practice just wrapped up at FedEx Forum. Talked to Santi Aldama and Desmond Bane today.
I saw that. I also saw a picture of one G.G. Jackson out there on the basketball court. Was he getting going a little bit?
Well, he was just shooting free throws while we were there, but that is more than we've seen him do.
Hey, that's
so
a win
far this season. So we'll take it. He's I purposely quote tweeted the Grizzlies PR release about when he'll be back because I didn't want people to be confused and be like, well, he's out there on the practice court. Why is he not playing in the games? Well, he had a serious injury that he's still recovering from. But hey, we'll take it. That is progress, man. That is progress. So that's good to see.
It is absolutely a good sign for the Memphis Grizzlies because I'm excited to see what he can bring to this team. A lot of people forget 20 point per game score last year as a starter for this Memphis Grizzlies team. In a dark era for the Grizzlies, G.G. Jackson was one of the few bright spots that we had. I got to be honest with you, Drew, though. Before we get into the Memphis Grizzlies, it would be a mistake for me to not ask you about Alabama, year one, no Nick Saban, barely missing the college football playoff. How are you feeling as a Bama grad?
Okay. So I'm on the Jason and John show every Thursday. That's like my weekly spot. And I'm hosting Jeff's show on Friday. Believe me, I'm going to come with more talking points than this. I'm writing this stuff down tonight. I'll bring it in tomorrow. And I don't even – it's hard to be upset with the fact that Alabama missed the college football playoff because they had two pretty horrendous losses this year. So, I while that stinks and it's a bummer and, like, they're going to get hit hard by the portal and, you know, now it feels like Kalen DeBoer is – on the hot seat because he's got 1 year to figure it out at this stage. All those are bummers. Like, I just, my issue isn't even with Alabama being left out. My issue is that the system is screwed up. Like, it's just, they found a way to mess this up, in my opinion. And I think no matter what way you put it, you can reach that conclusion. I understand that they didn't want to devalue conference championship games. And they didn't want to penalize SMU too much. You know, SMU doesn't have a ranked win. In fact, more than half of the at-large teams don't have ranked wins. A lot of them in general, like Clemson really probably shouldn't be in the college football playoff based on their schedule either. They won their conference championship, and that's the format. You can't be mad at the format, but you can change the format here in a couple of years. I do think that people are being intentionally blind to risk assessment. Like, you know, you had people going, well, look at this, Alabama complaining, their AD saying, we're going to have to talk about, you know, canceling future games, non-conference games, because strength of schedule wasn't really taken into account the same way that we had wished or hoped. It's like, but they didn't lose any games besides conference games this year. And I understand that, but that's not how risk assessment works, man. Like, risk assessment requires you to look at the future. And the truth is, Alabama has future home and homes scheduled with Notre Dame and Ohio State. And I don't know if those are great games to play if it comes down to how many games you're going to win over the course of the season. I think he was right to say that. I also think that no matter what way you slice it, like, I just don't think that this is the right system or that they did that great of a job, simply because here is Oregon getting totally screwed as the number one team, with Ohio State and Tennessee sitting right beneath them. You have one side of the bracket that's loaded and another side of the bracket that is clearly weaker than the other side. And I think no matter which way you slice it, I just don't know if SMU should have been in the field. And I'm not making that case in terms of Alabama, because if you want to point at Alabama and say, yeah, they have good wins and SMU doesn't, but they also have bad losses and SMU doesn't, that's fine. But the problem is South Carolina is sitting right there,
right,
with ranked wins, no bad losses, and with ranked wins, no bad losses, and they just beat the team that SMU lost to on the road the week prior. So they are clearly making a statement here that strength of schedule is not as valuable as the number of wins. But they also change the way that they do it every single year. So there's just got to be a better system than this. That's where my frustration lies. It's less about Alabama. It's more about the fact that I just think this committee and the way it's formatted now isn't right. And I think we should still allow a group of five team in there, like, and all that. But I can almost guarantee that changes are going to be coming in 2026 as soon as they can change this thing.
Yeah, like, I have issues with the teams getting a bye. I have issues with where teams are ranked in the actual rankings. Like, I think that Texas at number five is silly. They should not be at number five. They got an easier path than, like you said, a team like Oregon, who has been the number one team all season. And your reward is, oh, you have to play the winner of Tennessee and Ohio State. That feels like, you know, not very fair. And then Georgia has a pretty easy pathway to the college football playoff final. So I tend to agree with you. I even though I think they mostly got the teams correct because of how they had that final ranking, I think they backed themselves into a corner by putting SMU where they did, by saying that we have to protect the championship game. And ultimately, though, I think that they just didn't see SMU coming back in the fourth quarter and then losing to a 56-yard field goal to Clemson. Like, it just threw chaos in the college football playoff rankings, and it's like they put themselves in a tough position because they had to put SMU in because they were expecting the ACC to get one bid, and then all of a sudden you got to give them two, and then you look at Alabama and the SEC and say, listen, we understand that y'all have a harder schedule than the rest of the country, but we kind of put ourselves in these handcuffs and we have to lie in the bed that we made. So it was a bit of a mess for the first year of the college football playoff committee, even though I think ultimately they had eyeballs on the final week and the championship games did still get protected, but they just put themselves in a tough spot. But,
well, there's that. And Sankey, like, if you're Sankey in the Big Ten now, unfortunately, you've now upset them.
Yeah.
Both of the big dogs.
You've made now upset. Them both upset.
You've upset the SEC and you've upset the Big Ten because of what Oregon is now facing, and Ohio State, frankly. And that is not good news, I think, for college football fans of programs that aren't in those two conferences, because guess who's going to control college football now that the NCAA is irrelevant?
Yep.
It's going to be the SEC and it's going to be the Big Ten. And when they run this thing back in 2 years, they're going to make sure that they have their seats at the table. There's going to be three auto bids or two auto bids. And you know what? If it goes just south enough, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to say, see you later, and they're going to play in their own thing. And I don't think that that's good for college football, but that's just the dang truth, man. Like, they have all the power, they hold all the cards, and they're going to play them.
It absolutely feels like major changes are coming to how they select these teams. And I think that there needs to be changes because the SEC bias can be an annoying conversation. But to be quite honest with you, most of the football I watch is the SEC. And whenever I go outside of the SEC, it's just a bit of a different sport. And a lot of like a mid-tier SEC team would have a lot of success in like the ACC. And that has to be taken into account, even though I may agree with the teams in this year. It's just it definitely feels like an imperfect system right now. But that's enough college football playoff talk. I have you here because we've got to talk about Brandon Clark. You have a great piece over at the Daily Memphian about Brandon Clark and how he said he felt like he was hit by a train after games last season, and he was playing through knee issues earlier this season. And he went on to talk about how it's not necessarily just trusting your Achilles and coming back from that type of injury. You've got to trust your entire lower body.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that was a piece that I think people underrated when he came into the season, simply because he had made that 6-game cameo last year. And, you know, that was probably supposed to be the feel-good moment, right? When he got back on the court after a year being away from the game and that sort of thing. But it turns out that wasn't really the case. It was more so this season when he finally put the knee stuff past him. And then he moves into the starting lineup and increases the minutes and finds a groove. And there's not one moment in time in particular, but it did eventually hit him. Like, I'm not thinking about my leg anymore. And that was a massive step for Brandon Clark. And, you know, he definitely said that this has sort of changed his perspective, not necessarily the injury itself, but the rehab that it took to come back. It's like, you know, you soak it in a little bit more because you know how close you are to not having it. And so I think, you know, he was really honest in that piece, and I'm glad it got the response that it has because, you know, Brandon's one of the more open players on the team, and it was great of him to sort of share his thoughts on that.
He's been so important to this Grizzlies run that they've been on. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games, probably would be 10-0 if not for just a collapse in the fourth quarter against the Dallas Mavericks. But even in a game like the Boston Celtics, you can just feel Brandon Clark's impact, not only on the offensive end, but on the defensive end. He allows a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. to get back into that defensive player of the year mode that he was in. He gets him to turn into a roamer. And that's why, you know, you've seen Brandon Clark be in that starting five over the last few games. Do you expect him to stay in that starting five when a guy like Zach Edey is able to come back?
Yes, as long as the results continue to be similar to what they're getting now. I do think Edey is probably the long-term starter for the Grizzlies, but it depends on his development. Like, if he just turns into an absolute monster by the end of the year, like, yeah, you're going to make that move. But if I were to try to predict, I mean, I think this lineup clearly works. And it's not just BC's chemistry with Jaren. It's also his chemistry with Ja, right? Like, he's finishing around the rim at such a high rate. He's taking that short mid-range floater more than any big in the league. He's also, by the way, making that short mid-range floater at one of the highest efficiencies of all the bigs in the league. Like, it's working. And no one is, you know, Brandon is not the type of guy that very often gets caught off guard by some of these insane Ja Morant passes. And so I think to have him in there is to have some level of comfortability for this team. And, you know, it gives them a better chance of getting off to a strong start at the beginning of a game. And so I've really liked what I've seen from him in the starting lineup. And that was another thing, too, is like some people were saying, you know, Brandon's more comfortable coming off the bench. And he had said that. I don't remember when he would have said that. I'm not doubting that he may have said that at some point. But, like, I know now after talking to him, like, he's perfectly comfortable doing either. And, you know, I think he's enjoyed having the time as a starter. And as I've pointed out, like, this comes at a moment where he could really use the momentum. Like, you know, he's riding the wave right now. Like, don't take him off of it. Like, keep him right there in that spot and continue to let him get better and better.
Yeah, you know, right now I'm looking at his shot chart. He is 50 of 60 around the rim, 83.3% around the rim. Brandon Clark, if you give him the basketball around the rim, he's going to put it in. It's damn near a guarantee. I mean, he's one of the best putback guys in the NBA. He's a timely cutter. He's a lob threat at all times. It really saw that we saw his bunnies return over this past weekend. That dunk against the Boston Celtics was just vintage Brandon Clark. And I agree with you. You know, when he was talking about being comfortable coming off the bench, I do wonder if that may have been while he was still trying to come back from this injury, maybe if that was the context in which that quote came from. But when I watch Brandon Clarke, it is very apparent that he is the most comfortable when he's on the court with Jaren Jackson Jr. And then Ja Morant. I mean, death taxes Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clarke plus minus. It is always going to be positive every time you look at it when that trio's out there together. And that is why there have been some concerns from people about, well, Brandon Clarke's minutes are so tied to Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant. And I think that my response to that would be, you should expect to have your best players on the court anyway, so I'm not going to necessarily look at that as a red flag. I'm going to look at that as more of a positive, where if you have these guys healthy, they're probably going to win the basketball game.
Yeah, and Brandon Clarke is an instinctual player. Like, that's like a major part of his game, right? It's like, run to the open space, get the ball, score it. Like, that's Brandon Clarke. It's not around the perimeter, but it's on the interior. Run to the open space, get the ball, score it. And it took him a little bit to get those instincts back, too. That was something Taylor Jenkins said, and Brandon Clarke acknowledged himself. But, like, once he's in that flow, once he's got that sort of rhythm on that sort of thing, you know, who do you want him to be out there with? You want him to be out there with Ja and Jaren, because Jaren is your big that spaces the floor and opens up lanes for guys to dive to the basket, and Ja's the guy who's going to find him for the passes. So it makes perfect sense to me. So keep those three out there as much as you can. I think that that's pretty important.
And you brought up the point that Brandon Clarke is the best at catching the Ja Morant passes, and we talked about it a little bit last week, but Grizzlies fans out there, when you are watching the games, just watch Brandon Clarke when he's in there with Ja Morant. His hands are always at chest level. He knows a pass is coming at any moment, and that is how you have to play with Ja Morant. You've heard Jaren Jackson Jr. talk about it. You've heard Zach Edey talk about it. The last thing that you were expecting to happen on the basketball court is the first thing that Ja Morant is going to do. That is his number one plan, is to do the unexpected. So you have to be ready for those passes at all times. I do want to transition over to Jaren Jackson Jr. real quick, because I think he is playing at an All-NBA level. We are seeing a version of Jaren Jackson Jr. that was promised when he first got drafted. And I don't know if a lot of people know this story, but Drew, were you in Memphis when he got drafted yet? Were you the writer for the Grizzlies yet?
No, I wasn't writing about the Grizzlies. So I got to Memphis in August of 2018, so okay. It would have been shortly after.
Well, I'll never forget being in the arena when Jaren Jackson Jr. got drafted. You heard boos. You heard people not very happy with the selection of Jaren Jackson Jr., but he has certainly turned into one of the best players in the NBA, and I think he's playing at an All-NBA level. When you look at his stats this year, this is from our good friend Sean Coleman, NBA players to average at least 20 points, one block, one steal, one made three, and 60% true shooting or better per game in a season, minimum 65 games. KD's done it four times. Embiid's done it twice. LeBron's done it. Kawhi's done it. Dirk, Kat, Giannis, and now Jaren Jackson Jr. is averaging that right now. Pretty elite company for him to be in.
Yeah, he's having an incredible season. And, you know, I got asked for the podcast that Chris and I do, who's the number one scoring option on the Grizzlies? And it may matter when what point in the game you're in, because right. Late in the game, I think you want more possessions to Ja, because there's more opportunities for passing. But as a pure isolation scorer, is there anyone better on the team right now than Jaren Jackson Jr.? I don't think so. Like, he's been incredible at getting to the rim. He's kind of become a little bit more versatile on some of these drives where he can put the ball on the floor and he's not going into spin move every single time. Like, he's found all the angles and all the different ways to score. You know, it's a major, major deal for the Memphis Grizzlies to have a secondary star who is good enough to be a number one. And it feels like Jaren Jackson is finally hitting that point in his career. And when Ja goes out of the game, you don't ask yourself who's going to pick up the scoring load anymore. You know who's going to pick up the scoring load now. It's going to be number 13. Like, that's the guy. You can bank on him scoring 20 points, especially if Ja's not playing. And when Ja is playing, you can still bank on him scoring 20 points. So, you know, I think it's his development and sort of the way that he has grown as a player has been huge for this team. You know, but also, Let's pause and give Jaren some of the credit I think he deserves. And I do have something, I don't know when it'll be out. I'm working on a longer project and had the chance to have some good conversations with Jaren for it. But I think Jaren deserves a lot of credit for just being a model player within this organization. The stuff he does on the floor, off the floor, it all matters. And what I love about it is he tackles so many different things while still putting basketball first. And whether it be, you know, becoming an NBA All-Star, or winning Defensive Player of the Year, or starting in the fashion industry, and now he's getting dressed by some of the biggest, you know, companies in the world, and they're paying him, well, they're dressing him and sitting in front row at the fashion shows, or having his music on NBA 2K. Like, the guy is so versatile that he's unpredictable. And I think the way that he sort of carries himself and all that he does, and he truly is himself and leans into all of his different interests, is exactly what you want for somebody in this organization. It's the example that you want to set. So, you know, we got to give Jaren some credit for what he does, not just on the court, but off the court as well.
Absolutely. At 25 years old, he is the bona fide leader of this team in a lot of ways. Like, it does feel like he is a trusted voice. And I can't lie, when I'm watching the games, I always just feel more comfortable when Jaren Jackson Jr. is out there. Because like you said, he's turned into just one of the cheat codes of the NBA. If you throw him the basketball, it feels like he's going to put the ball in the bucket every single time. That little left-handed floater he's got is crazy.
Not just on the team, man. He's one of the leaders in the league.
In the league.
You know,
it's
he's
nuts.
He's the vice president of the Players Association. Like, and he got voted to be in that position. Everybody recognizes the type of character he has shown. And, I mean, you know, like, they will tell you as a beat writer, you always have to be careful saying, you know, people are great guys or whatever, because you don't know them the way that their family would know them and people super, super close to them would know them. Man, I've never had an exchange with Jaren that it hasn't been anything but entirely respectful. And, like, I just think that, you know, that what he has done for this organization and this franchise just has been really, really impressive.
He's a pro's pro, and we're lucky to have him on and off the court. We're also lucky to have you, Drew Hill. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Connor. Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That was Drew Hill, the Memphis Grizzlies writer for the Daily Memphian. You can find him at DrewHill_DM. Please go read his Brandon Clark piece. It is phenomenal. It really helps give you an insight into what a player is thinking when they're having to rehab from an injury like the Achilles. But next, we got to get to David Cobb from CBS Sports. We're going to talk about Bill Belichick. New coach at UNC. How do we feel about it? We'll talk about it on the other side. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 99 FM ESPN.